Thanks so much, Helena. you know, this group has gotten to mean so much to me. It's great to have a chance to run through my story again. it's sort of strange because with my whole story, I keep asking myself why. You know, why did I become an alcoholic? How did that possibly happen based on, you know, my growing up and everything else? I had a great childhood. I was had a loving parent, loving parents, loving family. I had one older brother, almost 9 years older than I was, and but I was a small, shy kid. I sort of in the background a lot. My best friend who lived next door was Mr. Dynamic, outgoing, everything like that. And I always felt like I was sort of in his shadow and hung around his coattails, so to speak. We stayed good friends through high school, drifted apart a bit in college, and then sort of lost touch after that. And I guess that shows that it was a lot shallower relationship than I had thought at the time. But my first drink was really at 16, and that really was not the beginning of anything. Two friends, we drove over to a liquor store and waited until some young guys came in and went over and got them to go get us a bottle, because it was a little harder to get where we lived if you were not of age. They came out and gave us a bottle of Cutty Sark Scotch. Had no idea what that was about. So we went back to his place and mixed it with Coke, Scotch and Coke.
Yeah.
And we drank the whole bottle, the three of us. We had enough sense to walk home after that. And I got home. No one knew anything. No one spotted anything. My mother came in. "You're a little late, aren't you?" Yeah. Okay. She didn't pick up anything. So either she didn't want to know or she just didn't pick it up at all. So I didn't really have much to drink at all after that until I got to college. And my roommate and I would go down to the tavern at Clemson and try to learn to like beer, because we didn't like it at first. And unfortunately, I did learn to like beer. Way too much. I didn't drink that much during the week in college, but weekends, yes. We would go down and get quite drunk on the weekends, and it never really interfered with school. Other than that, I didn't really have a problem there in school. My only problem was studying. I was not a great studier, a great student, and almost flunked out just because I didn't know how to study. And then I met my future wife, and here I was struggling to stay in school, and she's got a 4.0, and she really made an impression on me and got me on the ball and got me through. We got married. Well, I was 22 when I got married, right? Still one more semester to go in school. Came out, got a teaching job, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I had not been an education major. I got a teaching job just to make money to go to grad school, get an MBA down at Georgia State. And but I fell in love with teaching. It really clicked. And so after my first semester there, I changed my major and got my master's in biology. And that was where I was teaching. So I sort of backed into my career. Drank a lot on weekends still. I was the boys soccer coach, and we did really well. And I made the mistake. We were coming near the end of the season and we were undefeated, and I told the guys, "Hey, you know, they were talking about celebrating, let's go get drunk and all like that." And I said, "Hey, if we go undefeated, you won't have to get me drunk. It'll be easy." Well, after the last game when we won, the parents had a party, and the parents got me so drunk. And I think back on that, I'm thinking, how did I let that happen? But it did. And so when I would drink a lot, and it just kept going that way through most of the rest of my life. I really, during the week, come home, have a drink or two. I began to look really forward to that, to coming home and having that drink at night to kind of settle my day. And I looked forward to it more and more, and it became from one drink, it went to two. And then I retired. Once I retired, I had all this time, and I started drinking a little more at night. So this was a gradual process with me. My turning point really was in 2010 when I had my first knee replacement. It was hydrocodone. And I remember sitting on the couch, taking a couple of hydrocodone and getting that, oh, wow, feeling and thinking, man, this is great. I love this. This is what I want to do. And so I sort of lied a little bit about how much my pain was so I could keep the hydrocodone coming. And that worked for a while. I wasn't taking it every day. You know, I would think, okay, I can get high on Sundays, and then I added Wednesdays. And then I would drink in between. But then as it increased, it became more and more. And then I had my second knee in 2013, and I did the same thing. I just kept going and kept going. And I just decided to stay high every day. And so I sort of changed my pain to my back. And that way I could keep getting a prescription. And they sent me to a pain management doctor, and it was like a pill mill. She would give me anything I wanted, and hardly checked out anything. You know, okay, you want this, this is what I'll give you. And so that was the big thing, hydrocodone. But the hydrocodone wouldn't last forever, so I had to sort of augment that with alcohol. And that's where things really took off. When I would get high on a hydrocodone and then take a shot of vodka or something with it, you know, this is getting critical. This is getting bad. And I was just stupid, dangerous behavior to mix those two, hydrocodone and alcohol, and then go drive, get in the car and take off. I didn't want to drive anywhere unless I had a little bottle of vodka next to me. I would put vodka in a water bottle. So it looked like I was just sipping water as I'm driving along, and I'm sipping straight vodka. And this is just how stupid I got, how irrational my behavior got. And it started to show up a lot in my behavior and my physical movements and everything. I quit caring about like going to the gym or working out or doing anything. I didn't want to do anything except stay high. One day, excuse me, I walked into the bedroom. We were up at the lake, and my wife was packing a suitcase. What's going on? She said, I'm leaving. If you can't get yourself straight, I'm out of here. Whoa, okay. I wailed and cried and begged and pleaded and talked her out of leaving. But did that make me stop drinking? Hell no. I felt like I was going to cut back a little bit and settle down a little bit, but I couldn't do that. I mentioned before about hiking 5 years ago to yesterday and falling down a cliff into a river because I was drunk. I was high and, you know, almost died there. And that still didn't do it, it didn't wake me up. But it was that following March that I cr had a crash and burn. I was coming up from the basement because I had bottles all over the house, and I was trying to refill a bottle that I kept under the bed. And I was coming up with that from the basement. And my wife said, "What have you got? What are you doing?" Well, I was trying to hide the bottle in my shirt and behind my back and everything. And she came over and got the bottle and poured it down the sink. I had a meltdown. I was curled up on the couch, wailing and crying. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't have any more. What are you doing? She called 911 after talking to my nephew, and the hospital, the ambulance came, and ambulance out front. I'm walking up the driveway to get to the ambulance. The neighbors, Bruce, what's wrong? You okay? What's going on? I'm drunk. Boy, that was humiliating to have my neighbors come out concerned about my welfare, and hell, I was just drunk. And so that got me into rehab, and that was a turn. I haven't relapsed since. And so I guess I've never really had a relapse yet, but I can't afford to. I can't afford to do that because I don't have that many years left. Let's face reality. Hell, I'm 78, and so I've got to stay sober the rest of my friggin' life. I went to after rehab, I came out of rehab and I thought, oh, wow, hey, I've got this. This is great. This is wonderful. And then I had to face the reality of what I had done to my marriage and how I had been lying to Pam about everything, about why I was acting weird, about my drug use, my alcohol use. And then she told me that she cried every night I was in rehab. Holy shit, did that hit me in the face? That just ripped my heart apart. Still, when I think about that, I almost choke up a little bit because here I was destroying the most important thing in my life, hurting the most important person in the world to me. Why? Just to stay fucking high. That was all it was. I wasn't running from anything, I wasn't trying to escape a bad life. It was so selfish, so totally selfish that it was about me. I wanted to be high. I wanted to be drunk, keep that buzz going. That was the all important thing. Fuck everything else. Didn't matter. But boy, coming out, I found out it did. So this was tough. I started going to traditional meetings. And I went to a couple of in-person meetings, but then because of COVID, everything shut down. The in-person meetings were good for me at first because of the way the people welcomed me. And I'll always remember, and I've mentioned this before, my first meeting, they asked about new people, and I didn't say anything. And then he came back again and asked one more time, okay, is anyone here for their first time? And I raised my hand. So this big old guy with a bushy beard came over, gave me a bear hug and a white chip, welcomed me to the group. And man, that was such a good feeling. These people are welcoming me and they don't even know shit about me, but that was okay. And so that made me realize that alcoholics are not the kind of people I thought they were. They weren't the trash, the garbage, the lowlifes, the gutter snipes. They were people, because looking around that room, I saw people of every variety, every walk of life, and it was really cool. But then I had to go to virtual meetings, and there was a good meeting here in Atlanta, Quarantine and Sober. They're still going, and they were good, but they were too religious, and I became an atheist over 50 years ago. And so that just kept sticking in my craw that why do they want me to rely on something I don't believe in to help me stay sober? I just couldn't go there. And I kept, the old fake it till you make it thing. I hate that because I didn't want to fake it. I wanted to be true and honest because that was what I thought this was all about. And so I went through a couple of sponsors. The last sponsor I had, he sent me a book on how to pray. And so I knew this just wasn't going to work. So I haven't really had a sponsor in 2.5 years, I guess. And that's okay. I find that I don't really need it. The importance to me is the feeling I get in a meeting, and the way I see others relating here and everything. It's allowed me to open up and say things that I would not say before. I didn't want to share my feelings and my deep innermost fears and feelings. I kept that to myself. Growing up, if we got into a heated discussion in it's a family, Dad would say, "Okay, that's enough. Let's talk about something pleasant." Okay, push that away. Don't talk about it. He had a really rough growing up. He loved family, but he wanted things to be nice. And so that's the way I was feeling. Once I got sober, the whole thing I realized that I had to rebuild, my biggest issue was regaining my wife's trust. Still, if I take off by myself in the car, she said she worries. Am I going to go somewhere and get something to drink? Am I going to come back drunk? Is that going to happen? And I just, that's going to take a while to rebuild. A guy in one of the other meetings I go to, excuse me, he said that his wife told him that it took over 5 years before she felt like she could trust him at all. And I understand that. And I can't get mad about that. I can't get upset and say, "Oh hell, why don't you trust me? What's the matter? I'm good." I can't get mad. It's my fault. I did this, and I have to just suck it up and accept the consequences. And I've got to stay aware of the needs of other people and the needs of the people I run around with, the people I encounter, and not be so selfish. It's no longer all about me. And it's really troubling to me to realize how long I was like that, how long I was just stuck in myself. And I've said many times that sobriety and AA was a big start for me, but it doesn't just keep me sober. It's making me a better person, I feel like. And I feel like going through the steps, which I did, helped me with my inner self-awareness and helped me to become so much more aware of my effect on other people. And so it was good for me. AA was good for me. But then I think I outgrew it. And so, but I did not outgrow what I got from it. That now I have to make choices that don't just help me, but help other people as well. And I've got to be careful about how what I say, what I do in relationship to others, that it's not going to be something that is going to be damaging or hurtful or in any way bad for them. But I've got to pause. That's another thing I've learned is I have to pause. I can't open my mouth without pausing. I can't just blurt it out. That's not going to work. Think before I speak. Regrets. Okay, we will not regret the past nor close the door on it, whatever, something like that. I do regret the past. I regret the things I did. I regret my behaviors. But from that, I do want to shut the door on it. I'm really good about closing the door on something bad, but I want to peek into that door every so often and look in there and learn from the things that I did. To me, my regrets are a teaching tool for myself. It's teaching me that that's a way of life I don't want to go back to, that I don't want to be that person anymore. So, as long as I learn from my mistakes, if I'm a teachable person, let me learn from my mistakes. Let me be aware that this happened because of me. I never thought I would become an alcoholic or an abuser of drugs. I thought I was a strong enough person to just handle it, but I was not. That exposed a weakness in me that I never wanted to admit that I had. And So I'm learning from that. I'm learning that, hey, I'm not who I thought I was. I'm not who I pretended to be. So I feel like I'm much more of a real person now. I'll let it out. I'll say it. I'm telling you, I'm weak when it comes to alcohol and drugs. So I can't risk it. I hear the stories in here of relapses, and that scares the shit out of me that that could happen. And I can't let that ever happen again because life is too short at this point. And so I've got to keep at it. And the fact that we can sit here and talk about this without saying, oh, God's going to take care of you, because I don't believe that. How can I turn my life over to something I don't believe in? But I believe in you, and I believe in the sobriety that I have gained and the feeling I have gained by coming to a free thinker meeting where we are free to express our ideas and our opinions and our feelings. And this cat won't leave me alone. But it's just so great to see all of you and to be here. And thanks for the chance, Helena. And keep on rolling, folks. I love y'all. You're great. You're such an important part of my life and my sobriety now. Have a good rest of your week.